Well, hello, dear friends. Greg Kokel here on Stand to Reason, and I'm actually in a little bit of a somber mood right now. Glad to be with you. Glad to chat with you. And I'm in northern Wisconsin, which generally puts me in a really good mood because I love it up here. I'm in a local church broadcasting to you guys. And it's always hard when we lose people that are warriors, that have made a difference, maybe in our lives or maybe in the life of the church. And that's been happening a bit lately, and it makes me wonder, what's the next shoe to drop, so to speak. I mean, Ravi, we lost Ravi 2 months ago. I just learned today that J.I. Packer went to be with the Lord 2 weeks ago. And just a couple of days ago, I found out about the loss of another brother. And he was someone who was a personal friend. In fact, we don't see each other every month or whatever. Last time we saw each other was last year. We got together for dinner. And this was also a personal friend and a Christian warrior, as it turns out. I'll tell you about it in a moment. But he was someone who perished at his own hand, which makes it all the more tragic for us left behind as we consider the loss of our dear brother. He is a professor of criminal justice at UNC, that's the University of North Carolina. He's a regular columnist at the conservativetownhall.com. He was an in-resident scholar at Summit Ministries, and they are just grieved beyond expression right now. A regular speaker, by the way, at a series of conferences around the country at J. Warner Wallace and Frank Turek, the three of them, spoke at these universities making the case for Christianity. His name is Mike Adams. You might recognize the name from Town Hall. You might recognize the name from some of his books, like Welcome to the Ivory Tower of Babel, Confessions of a Conservative College Professor, or Letters to a Young Progressive, How to Avoid Wasting Your Time Protesting Things You Don't Understand. I like that title. He was a faithful fan of Stand to Reason. He was always promoting us, always talking about us wherever he went. He was great. And God bless him. He is blessing him, I guess, now. It's kind of a gallows humor a little bit. But last Thursday, July 23rd, he took his own life. And I don't know all the details about it. I do know he's going through a very hard time in his life. Look, Mike was one of those guys. He was a bit of a firecracker, okay? He was not afraid to ruffle feathers to get people thinking. And he was right in the thick of it. He was a professor at a very secular public university that is very politically correct. And consequently, as an outspoken follower of Christ and conservative, he was happy to stand tall and speak against the nonsense of the left. And as a result, he took a lot of incoming. And for years, Mike Adams had been severely trashed and still is, by the way, if you go look up anything about him, and I'm not suggesting you do. I'd rather you didn't, frankly, and I'll tell you why in just a moment. But even after his death, the kinds of things that are being said about him are just vile. And he was a decent man. He was a decent human being. In any event, he was trashed and emotionally brutalized by those on the left. I think the right word is bullied, actually. And those on the left are tireless bullies, in spite of what I think are their shallow and self-serving objections against bullying. Yet even so, for years and years and years, he remained a fearless Christian, especially as a defender of the unborn and as a defender of America's, every American's, by the way, liberty to speak their mind. More recently, though, he was running into more difficulty. He had a lawsuit a number of years ago against the university on free speech violations, which he ended up winning. And it was a landmark lawsuit that has helped many people since then. But new conflicts, and he was forced into an early retirement, divested of his post at UNC, and his heart was in teaching and in communicating and that. And now he has been in COVID confinement like everyone else, depressed by that, not able to work face to face with Summit this year, as he usually does. He was a in residence scholar, you know, there at Summit, like I mentioned. So, you know, things just got harder and harder for him, and then they got too hard, and this happens. There's no judgment in my voice or my heart at all about it. It's sad. I didn't know Mike was going through this difficult time. I would have reached out to him more, but sometimes it's just too much. Even if you're strong, even if you love the Lord with all your heart, it's just hard to stand up against constant, brutal attack. David French wrote a piece as a eulogy. It's titled "A Eulogy for a Friend, a Lament for Our Nation." And just a couple paragraphs, though, because I think it gives you a sense of what this dear man endured. And French writes, "In reality, we are not created to endure an avalanche of hate. Few people have the thick skin they might believe they possess." By the way, just as an aside, that's not me. I don't have the thick skin. I mean, I get some abuse, but not much. Not like Mike got. It ain't no fun for me. It's no fun for anybody. Even though we stand tall because it's important to do so, I'll talk more about that in a moment, even so, it's still not fun. It hurts. "And few people have the thick skin," as I continue here in French's piece, "that they might believe they possess until they're under fire." So he writes, "we fire off broadsides and reel from the response." And then he says, "Indeed, if I had to come up with a single sentence to sum up all too much of our current political and cultural combat, it would be this: we are a nation of bruised reeds, busy breaking each other." Then he closes, "Mike stood condemned in the eyes of the world, but God's grace is sufficient for him. Mike isn't canceled. His sin is. In God's glorious presence, his good name is restored." In fact, it didn't ever need to be restored in God's presence, in my view, parenthetically here. Last line, "rest in peace, my friend," which he is. Now, these things, especially Mike's death, because the other fellows, you know, Ravi and J.I. Packer and those that went before them, Norm Geisler last year, they, you know, finished the course, had noble lives, in a certain sense went out with a cheer from everybody. Mike has gone out with a jeer from thousands and thousands because of the unique role that he played in the body of Christ, facing and confronting the culture. And so my heart agonizes about that, but I realize that Mike's not the only one. It makes me think of a larger issue. And something that's increasingly pressing on all Christians, not just those like Mike who are on the front line. The amount of abuse that Christians are getting in the public square is growing by leaps and bounds. And I have actually been saying this for a while, for a number of years, but I honestly did not think it would accelerate to the level that it currently is. And the trajectory that it's moving. Now, I got to say, even though it's getting hard for Christians here, we have got it better than almost any other Christian, any place else in the world or at any other time of history. There's been a lot of grace by comparison that we've been receiving for the safety in our culture. And I think that's partly because of our Christian presence. But in any event, it still is getting much more difficult for us. And the amount of hostility is increasing, and the price for faithfully following Christ is going up. And partly because the culture is very happy to punish in a variety of ways those who do not walk in lockstep with them. People are losing their jobs all over the country. Not because they're staying at home. I mean, they are because of that. I'm not talking about COVID. I'm talking about how people who say something in public that is a reasonable and fair characterization of their point of view. And in virtue of the nature of the point of view, they are losing their jobs. Or the point of view of their children who voice it in the public social media context. The adult loses their job, or the boyfriend, or something that was said 15 years ago that is considered now to be socially inappropriate, and so now they lose their job today for something that happened 15 years. This is happening everywhere, and the left is cannibalizing itself too, which I have no trouble with. They're welcome to eat their own kind alive. It troubles me when they are virtuous people, otherwise virtuous people. Okay? And now, and of course, this includes Christians, right? And if you're not being visible about your convictions as a good ambassador, well, then you're not going to get any pushback, all right? So there's safety in silence. There is a certain kind of safety in silence. Not with God. I mean, I realize there's always a requirement for us to be prudent in the way we pursue the challenges that we face in the public square. It's something that Stand to Reason has always cared about. You know that. It's not just knowledge. Being an ambassador involves an artful method, an attractive manner. That's wisdom and character. Okay, so that's part of the package. But complete silence is not acceptable, because an ambassador has a message he's been entrusted with to guard and to communicate. I'm not talking about Stand to Reason speakers. I'm not talking about professional clergy. I'm talking about every faithful follower of Christ. Now, they do that in different ways. We have, in a certain sense, different callings. We find our feet in different places on the planet and in different jobs and in different social circumstances. But in those circumstances, we still are our ambassadors with a message that we need to find a way to communicate in an appropriate fashion in the context that we're in. Now, there are a lot of, let me just say, so-called Christians that are not getting any grief. And the reason they're not getting any grief is because they retain the name Christian while siding morally and theologically with the other side. And to them, as harsh as this may sound, they have their reward in full. To quote Jesus, their reward is the pleasant nods of all the people around them that they're trying to please, but they are not going to get that nod from the Lord Jesus himself. Faithful Christians, on the other hand, are going to increasingly feel the heat. So I want to offer a few suggestions to you, and these were the same suggestions that I offered our team at Stand to Reason during our staff meeting today. The point I'm making is we are not somehow outside of the fray, outside of the circumstances where we need to pivot, if you will, favorite word nowadays, adjust to the circumstances, take on a strategy that will allow us to be effective in the midst of the hardship. So I'm saying this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm telling our team to do, and so this is what I'm telling our Stand to Reason community to do, and I hope it's helpful. I mean, we were getting discouraged, some of them. I was. I get it. I'm not immune to that. How are we going to keep going? You know, someone said. Another one says, I'm afraid to even look at my social media, because what happens is when we take a stance in public, we're going to get in public a serious pushback, and it's generally not nice. We don't mind being taken exception with on the ideas and on the merits. That's fine. That's good. We believe in that. It's the nasties that are hard to handle, as you know. So here's my first point. If you are walking with Christ and making your convictions visible in some appropriate way, and you're getting massive pushback from others, like on the social media, etc., then don't read it. I don't read that stuff. Why? I don't want to be discouraged. If somebody says something nice to me, fine. If somebody says that I was out of line on the merits of an argument, I look at that. And last week we had a discussion here on the show about a pastor who had taken me to task on a point of view that I had and claimed I was a moral relativist as a result. I argued that he had misunderstood moral relativism and he can disagree with my view that I expressed, but he's mistaken on this point. So it was an educational opportunity. All right. And so those are okay. But if we just get nasty, 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 why am I going to read that? Don't you read it either. If that's what you get on all your responses, let it go. I told my team, I said, let the dead bury the dead. All right? Just let them go. We don't have to answer every single thing because many of these people who act like this, talk this way, are not going to be interested in a real substantive answer. Proverbs says when you correct a fool, he either laughs or he screams and yells and has a tantrum. My paraphrase, of course, but you get the point. That's it. So are these people we want to carry on with? No, 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 no. Don't waste your time in that. Don't let it hurt your feelings. Just don't listen to it. Incidentally, you know, when Paul became a Christian, in the book of Acts, you can read this, in the very first wave of persecution, I think this is when he went to Damascus. I can't remember for sure, but it was like one of those first cities. And so he's preaching the gospel and everybody's amazed and the Jews are mad. And so a wave of persecution arises. You know what he did? He left. He got out of there. They lowered him over a wall in a basket, which is an indication to me that we don't have to stand there and take the heat if it's not necessary. All right? Sometimes we do. Can't get out of it. But if we can walk away, let's walk away. That wasn't the only time, by the way, he escaped persecution. So just a thought. So first thing, don't listen to all that stuff. Don't get it in your head. Secondly, don't be surprised. There is a very simple explanation for why we often feel outmatched and outmaneuvered. A simple reason why the scoreboard seems sometimes to read the same thing, Lions 10, Christians 0. And Jesus gave us that. Here it is, Matthew 10, which, by the way, is a great chapter in the sense that he is giving instructions preparing his own disciples for this kind of thing when he sends them out on a short-term mission. He says a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a slave above his master. If they have called the head of the household Beelzebub, how much more the members of his household? So Jesus warned us in advance. He said, this is exactly how I was treated. You're going to get the same thing. That will be your lot. But this is also why he finished those comments with this line. Therefore, do not fear them. Be prepared. Understand it's coming. Don't be surprised. They did it to me. They're going to do it to you. But do not fear them. Then he actually says that line three times in this discourse. But in this case, he gives the rationale. For there's nothing covered that will not be revealed and hidden that will not be known. And basically, Jesus is saying, I know it looks like you're the odd persons out right now. You're communicating the truth and the mobs are not listening and they're screaming and yelling and calling you names. But one day, the light will be shining on everything and all the hidden stuff will be made public and the whole world will see what the truth is. And so there's a sense he's saying you're going to be vindicated. Now, it's not, you know, an opportunity for us to say, I told you so. I'm right, you're wrong. No, that's not the point. The point is we take confidence in the fact that though the score seems against us now, there will ultimately be public vindication of the truth. All right? And listen carefully to those words. Do not fear them. Jesus is with us, and he promises a final day of reckoning. As one person put it, there is a justice, and one day they shall feel it. But even ultimate victory should not be our concern now. Okay. The fact is, 1 Peter chapter 4, Peter says, don't be surprised. Why are you surprised at the fiery ordeal among you as if something odd were happening to you? This isn't odd. This is normal. What are you saying? I've read those words many times. That's why I can speak from memory, because they've been a great encouragement to me. Of course, this kind of thing is going to happen. This is the kind of world we're in. We are strangers in a strange land. Okay? And then the warning in second, that was chapter 4 of 1 Peter, chapter 5. Peter says, Satan prowls around like a roaring lion. seeking someone to devour. Now, I've heard people say, oh, yeah, he's making a lot of noise, but he has no teeth. Nonsense. He is not just roaring. He has big teeth, and they do damage. Okay? There is danger there for warriors. So we must take that seriously. That's part of the package. That's part of what we're facing. But the antidote, of course, that Peter gives, he says, but resist him. Firm in your faith, knowing that the experiences of suffering that you are experiencing is also being experienced by your brethren who are in the world. And if after you suffered for a little while, then God will confirm and establish you. Go read it for yourself. I didn't have the perfect quote. It's fabulous. And it's for now. So don't listen to it if you don't have to. Don't ruin your day. Don't be surprised. Here's another don't. Don't play the victim. Don't play the victim. We should never expect a fair shake. We should never whine when it's not given. We are not to play the victim. That is disloyalty to Christ, frankly. And Oz Guinness wrote once, I love this. I had to retrieve it from my kind of quote packet. Here's what he said. Followers of Christ flinch at times from the pain of wounds and the smart of slights. Okay, I get it. But that cost is in the contract of the way of the cross. And no child of a sovereign God whom we can call our Father is ever a victim or in a minority. And so what I'm saying here is just guard yourself. It is easy to think that way. I have to fight it on a regular basis. So I'm with you on this. But we have to say, I'm not going to play a victim. I'm going to do something else. I'm going to count my blessings. And why do I say that? Because that's what Jesus says. Watch this. Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. Now, that obviously is from Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, verse 10 through 12, but there it is. Next time you get grief from somebody, and you're getting grief because of Jesus, not because of you, that can happen. Rejoice, be glad. Final thought here, and that is, I'm just going to call this focus your focus, all right? I want you to know how I fight off discouragement. And the way I fight off discouragement is I do not look at the results. I'm not counting, gee, how many people did I convince today? How many people changed their point of view? The left in this country, those that oppose us in all kind of different ways, are calcified in their viewpoint. It takes an act of God to change their heart. Of course, that's always been the case, I guess. But I don't have any utopian ideals of all these people that are going to respond to me communicating the truth. Frankly, that's not my job. It's God's job. And I think of what former Ambassador Alan Keyes said. It was something I had posted in my study for a long time. I don't even know where the quote went, but I'll read it to you. He said, it is not for us to calculate our victory or to fear our defeat, but to do our duty and leave the rest in God's hands. I have talked many times about the idea that we have an audience of one. And from the very outset of Stand to Reason, our goal was not first results. We want to get results. No, our first goal was faithfulness. We want results, of course, but not at the expense of faithfulness. Faithfulness is first. Audience of one, capital O, is first. And so we do what's right and we speak the truth as graciously and persuasively as possible. And then we let the chips fly. Let them lie, let them fly. We take what comes our way because we have accomplished our goal before our audience of one. And I want to close here with something that Amy sent to me, and I got her permission to read this because as we had this conversation, she went to Hebrews 11. Before I say this, though, I want to just stick in here, and that is, we need our young guns. as I like to put it, because our old guns are moving on. We're going home. We're hanging up our cleats. We've done our job, or getting there, and I'm not prognosticating in my own situation, but, you know, I'm running out of steam. Times I got a little more sand in the bottom than in the top, right? Okay. That means that's why I care about discipleship. That's why I care about you guys. I'm passing the baton. We lose good guys because they finish the course. That's why. Now it's our turn, your turn, to take the baton. All right. Here's what Amy said. Just reading Hebrews 11 and realizing that again and again, it ties the endurance of the saints to the their understanding of God. This is so Amy. Who he is, what he's done, what he will do. They endured pressure, threats, and suffering because they believed that he is and that he rewards those who seek him. Abraham knew he would bring about a city he's creating for us. Sarah considered him faithful. These are citations from the chapter she's including here. The saints persevere because they know he is bringing about a better country. Abraham was obedient with Isaac because he knew God is able to raise people from the dead. Moses knew the riches of Christ are better than the treasures of Egypt, so he endured as seeing him who is unseen. Seeing God is what made the difference for them, she says. Their knowledge of God is what gave them endurance. Yeah, there you go. Just remember, friends, our lives, our troubles here are the ittiest bit of the whole picture. And more I reflect on how small this lifetime is and how tiny this world is compared to all of God's reality. Our 4 score and 10, we endure faithfully and serve, make the best of it, but it shrinks into an infinitesimally small size when compared to eternity. What we're experiencing? Momentary and light affliction. That's God's perspective. Hope that encourages you. Greg Kokel here on Stand to Reason, to your calls in just a moment.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Have you ever wondered how Stand to Reason is able to produce fresh, accessible, and relevant content each week? As a nonprofit ministry, we rely on generous supporters in order to provide the tools and tactics you need to be an effective ambassador for Christ. If you've benefited from this podcast or any of our donor-provided resources, including apps, blog posts, articles, or short videos, consider making a financial contribution to Stand to Reason today. When you visit str.org/donate, you'll find a newly renovated transaction page that makes it easier than ever to show your financial support. It has been an honor providing you with a host of free resources over the past 25 years to help you give voice to the Christian worldview. Please help us to continue on into the next 25 years by making a gift today at str.org/donate.
Giving you a piece of my mind, as I usually do every week. That would be Tuesday evenings, 4 to 6 p.m. L.A. time. By the way, if you want the number to call in to our show, 855-243-9975. You can dial direct during that time, Tuesdays, 4 to 6 L.A. time. If you're calling internationally, 562-424-8229. Incidentally, if you have not checked out Red Pen Logic, with Mr. B, that would be Mr. Barnett, you need to do so because he picks apart bad ideas in a fun and engaging way and actually has created a little bit of a firestorm in some cases. So that means we're making a difference. You can find it by going to YouTube and just type in Red Pen Logic. And if you subscribe, then I guess then they send you a note every time we have a new posting, which is trying to do two a month. So lots of fun things there that will help you to think more carefully about a Christian and learn how to answer certain challenges that are coming down the pike. All right. And wanted also to remind you that as things stand right now, we are still doing our Reality Student Apologetics Conference in Washington, October 16 and 17, and in Minnesota, November 13 and 14, and of course in Texas in February 26 and 27th of 21. So if you go to realityapologetics.com, you got all the information there, all the speakers. I don't have the details here, but you know how this works. Formerly Rethink, now Reality. And we're moving right ahead and praying and trusting God will allow us to have people in situ in the auditorium. Because look at it, in Minnesota, last time we had almost, 2,400 people at our very first conference, young people. So anyway, looking forward to that. All right, time to go to our callers and let's talk with Joe, who is in California. Joe, welcome.
Hi. Hi, Greg. It's a pleasure talking with you. It really is.
Thank you.
It's a little bit hard to hear, so if I talk over you, I'm not being rude.
That's okay. I'm used to it. I got kids.
Great. Anyways, this really ties in with a lot of things, although I don't know how you change tone from going to Mike Adams to everything else. That's one of the challenges of radio. I admire you for doing that.
Thank you.
This ties into a lot of things here. Obviously, you've been talking about tactics since there were audio cassettes. That makes us old, right?
Uh-huh.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make tactics memorable for people. And so I've created an acronym to help out, but it also has a visual component as well to it. And I was wondering if I could share that with you. If it goes too long.
Sure. What's the acronym?
If it goes too long, you can catch me over a break, or I can call back another time, however you want to do that. But I'd rather go through it at a pace so I don't skip anything. I have an acronym, and it's the acronym Learn to Lead. So you write.
There's a lot of points here. I like the 3-point sermons. Learn to Lead. Okay, you're going to have to be brief, though, okay, because I got a bunch of people on board.
Okay, then
and I talked a lot at the beginning of the show, so learn to lead.
I will skip the acronym, and I will do my short version. How about
good.
That?
All right.
And then maybe if somebody from Standard Reason, I'd like to be part of a think tank on things like this, because I have a lot of ways to make things memorable. Jim Warner Wallace's book, God's Crime Scene, I've got that whole thing. I've got 80 points to it, but also
So what you're doing is you're taking other people's stuff and then you're kind of, in a certain sense, organizing it and simplifying it so it's easier for other people to get. That's fabulous. That's a big part of our project, and that is translation. And so we got other people that are taking our stuff and translating it further. Man, we're thrilled. Want to get that stuff out. So give us a thumbnail sketch of what you're doing.
Thumbnail sketch of it. And the one more component, though, we have a medical condition, the family, so I got lots of ideas, but I don't have time to develop it. So it'd be really fun if I could just get with some bright minds on that. But let me give you the sketch on that. Okay, so this is different than what I was intending to do, but if you take, how a cursive 2 looks like a capital Q, or cursive capital Q looks like the letter 2? Okay, we could just simplify it that way and take the phrase learn to lead. All right, think of that 2 as a Q. That reminds you to ask questions.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So I've got the phrase learn to lead. Well, there's really two types of questions that you can ask in a conversation. This is like the Colombo tactic. And
okay.
That Q reminds me to ask learning questions.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty simple, right? So if someone says there's no such thing as truth, you've never heard that objection before, we'll just say, you can ask learning questions about it. I call it questions of clarification and verification. Okay, what do you mean by that? Why do you think that? All right. Now, the 2, if you erase part of that, are you following me so far?
Yes, clarification and verification. Sounds familiar.
Yeah. I don't know if you actually use that phrase or not.
No, I don't. But the concept, obviously, that's the first and second questions
same thing
of the game plan.
What do you mean by that and why?
Yeah. How'd you come to that conclusion?
What do you mean by that and why?
Sure.
So if somebody says there's no such thing as truth, okay, what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
And as they're talking with you, you can look for things that go. Now, check this now. That Q suddenly becomes a 2. Look for things that go 2 different directions. Okay, and you could erase part of that 2 because this is another part 2. Look for things that are inconsistent or incomplete. Okay, so that 2 reminds me to look for things going 2 different directions. And since I erased part of it, it also reminds me to look for things that are incomplete. Mm-hmm. Now, I actually have an acronym for LEAD, which maybe there's not time to go into. I'll let you decide on that. But as you start noticing there's, you know, problems with what the person's saying, you can go into what I call leading question. Right. Hence the phrase, learn to lead. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that right there, I think, is revolutionizing, because I think a lot of Christians don't think that way. They don't think, all right, automatically, I'm going to go in learning mode. I'm going to ask, you know, I want to get their view in detail. And then, okay, now I'm analyzing it. What's going 2 different directions? What's inconsistent? Or what's incomplete? Like maybe their argument doesn't quite go all the way through. Mm-hmm. And then instead of telling people they're wrong, I'm going to ask them a leading question to kind of highlight a fault in their view. But now here's the trick. And then you talk about Christians being canceled and all that. You don't have to ask a leading question in a leading way. You can continue to stay in learner's mode and just say, hey, you know, I don't understand how this works. You know, you say there's no such thing as truth, but you're saying that as if it's true. Can you help me understand this?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not actually sharing my view, but I'm still getting my view across in a very subtle way. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. Actually, it's a really nice kind of a alternate summary. It's a summary of the kinds of things that I have in the book, but it's a clarification of the things, but it's used in different vocabularies. And I like that. Clarification, verification, inconsistent, incomplete, Q, the 2 goes to a Q, and then it's 2 different. It's great. And I am thrilled with anybody who takes the things that we offer at Stand to Reason and finds additional ways of communicating those same ideas and or adding to them. And we've had lots of people do that. So listen, Joe, thank you so much for the call. I have to get to some others here because as I mentioned, I talked so long. Let's go to Ron in North Carolina. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate what you do. I had a question about speaking in tongues. Do you know of any place in the Bible that it suggests there's an individual speaking in tongues, the communication between the individual and God,
right,
as opposed to the corporate speaking in tongues?
Right. I don't have a real strong opinion on this. I think that the main purpose of gifts is to edify the body of Christ, okay? And Paul makes this argument in 12 and 14. He jumps over. He talks about the issue of love there in chapter 13. And then he specifically addresses the problem of tongues with no interpretation. He says, you know, how are you going to follow a bugle? You can't tell the sound. Okay, so unless you speak with the mouth or words that are clear, then you're basically making a lot of noise. And so that is the chief purpose of any spiritual gift. It's for the body of Christ. Okay, now there is a reference there to when a person speaks in private in tongue, that they are edifying themselves. And there is a sense in which Paul sounds like he's speaking in a discrediting way. Like, you ought to be thinking about edifying the body. But that doesn't, now I think about it, it doesn't mean that there's anything bad about edifying yourself unless that's just your main deal, okay? So, but there are other references, and maybe even some in 1 Corinthians 14. I don't have the whole text right in front of me, but in Ephesians chapter 6, Paul says to pray at all times in the Spirit. And now some people take the phrase "in the Spirit" to mean speaking in tongues, and I don't know if that's the case. So there, you know. So I'm kind of on the fence about this, and I don't make a big deal about it, unless with the tongues issue, this thing has died down a lot in the last few decades. But early on, it was a huge deal in Southern California in the charismatic circles that I that I ran in, and everybody wanted everybody else to speak in tongues one way or another. And so they're going to push you into it, and that's a huge mistake. The gifts are given by the Spirit, and not everybody gets the same gift. And Paul says that explicitly. So that would be a verse that argues against the notion that everybody can have a so-called prayer language. Okay?
Right. I appreciate that. And do you think someone can pray for and expect to receive a gift that they do not currently have? I always heard that you receive a gift or gifts when you become a believer. But can, walking through life 20 years later, can you pray for a gift and expect to receive it, you think?
Well, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 14 to pray that you might have the greater gifts, essentially. Now, I don't think he's addressing – I should get the text out just so I don't get it wrong. But I don't think that he's addressing individuals in that case. I think he's addressing churches in that particular circumstance. In other words, he's saying, you know what? Churches should have the gifts that matter for the life, the body life of that church, okay? And you can go over 1 Corinthians 14 and see that. I'm just paging over there right now. And so he does suggest – here, pursue love, yet desire earnestly spiritual gifts, but especially that you may prophesy. It's first verse in chapter 14. Now, he doesn't say pray for that, but he says desire it. You know, so if you desire it, it's okay to ask for what you desire if your desire is right. And it is right here, 1 Corinthians 14:1. But I think that he's not saying individual people pray for all these different gifts that they would have, but rather that the local body – should be well-rounded and represented in the gifts that are appropriate for that body, okay? And there's some debate as to whether certain gifts, the so-called sign gifts, are appropriate now. They were then but aren't now because they naturally died off. I'm not convinced by that argument, by the way. I'm not a cessationist. But I think there's a whole lot of really what amounts to nonsense that is passed off as spiritual gifts, especially nowadays, not so much in tongues, but in the area of prophecy, where people are learning how to prophesy and all that. That's nonsense. You don't learn how to prophesy. It's a revelatory gift. The apostles didn't learn how to write the Bible. They didn't try a couple of times and get it half right and half wrong and finally worked it out so every word was God-breathed. No, God's in charge of that process, okay? So as far as asking for gifts, there's a line of thinking that's, I think, entirely legitimate, that when you are born again, you're given your package, so to speak. All right? I don't know if that's actually the case. Maybe later on you get a gift. Maybe you just express the gift that you were given early on. The distinction there to me isn't so important. Important thing is that you seek to be productive in the body of Christ with the capabilities that you have. I don't think the gifts in 1 Corinthians 12 or Romans 12 or Ephesians 4 or, 1 Peter, I don't think those are comprehensive gifts. I mean, lists, rather. I think that they are examples of the kinds of things that people do in the power of the Holy Spirit to build up the body. And there may be other things as well that you do. So I don't encourage people to get all focused and over-focused, I guess, on that gift. A gift or whatever. I think they should focus on being useful and helpful and then see what bears fruit in the body and then do that more. And in my case, that was like talking, just natural for me to jibber jabber. And it seemed to bear fruit. The more I did it, the more I got educated and the more I attended to my own craft to improve it. And so it became pretty clear that this was a gifting for me that I wanted to focus in on. And that's what I've done in my life. And I'd say the same thing here in terms of pursuing your spiritual gifts. Don't worry so much about the lists. Think about what you can do for the body of Christ.
That's excellent. I appreciate it very much.
Well, you're so welcome, Ron. I appreciate the call. I'm looking at the clock right now, and why don't we just take another break, and I'll plug in my computer because I see a low battery here, and then we'll come back for more calls on Stand to Reason. Stay with us.
Some people treat Christianity like it's a build-your-own Sunday shop. They include the bits they like and exclude the bits they don't. The problem is, truth is not ice cream. You can't build your own biblical reality like you build an ice cream sundae. You can't pick and choose the parts you prefer. Truth doesn't work like that. Truth is what matches up with reality. Sadly, there are some who are creating a version of Christianity that fits their own subjective desire rather than sound doctrine. At this year's STR Reality Conferences, you will get the tools to identify counterfeit versions of Christianity so you can guard against them. We want to show you that biblical reality isn't something we shape, rather, it's something that shapes us. So join us at one of this year's STR Reality Conferences. Discover why truth is not ice cream by visiting realityapologetics.com and registering today.
You know, if you've gained anything from listening to Stand to Reason, I'd really be thrilled to hear it from you. I love to take your questions, of course, but I also want your feedback. So here's what you can do. Head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating and a review. That kind of thing really helps us to get the word out so more ambassadors for Christ can find the show and become equipped to stand confidently. And you never know, I might just give you a shout out on the air to show you my appreciation for your positive review. I value you as a faithful listener. I look forward to reading what you think about the show. Thanks. All right, friends, Greg Kokel back with you here on Stand to Reason. I say back because we had a mess up a little bit with our connection and then the whole show disappeared. So my apologies for that. And we're still trying to work out the kinks of all this remote stuff because we're not doing things in studio. And actually, I usually do it from my home in the Thousand Oaks area in Southern California. Right now, I'm in Northern Wisconsin, and I got a good broadband, but, you know, so we're just working it out. My apologies. And to Chris, who I missed and we had such a hard time with, I know what your question was, and I'd like to answer it as we start off the show here and just give some thoughts to you on it. And then we can go to some of the other callers that have been waiting through the last hour and anybody else who wants to call in. The question he had was, isn't it a straw man to say that theistic evolutionists think evolution is accidental? Now, what a straw man is, for some of you who are not familiar with the phrase, is when someone misrepresents or mischaracterizes another person's point of view. And then that's the straw man, like a scarecrow, and then knocks it down because it's easy to oppose a straw dummy than the real thing. And it's not a very good it's not a nice thing to do if you're actually guilty of that. It's bad manners and it's bad thinking, okay? But in this particular case, I don't – as long as I'm qualifying my understanding properly – I do not think it is a mischaracterization or a misrepresentation to say that theistic evolutionists think evolution is accidental. But that needs a clarification. Now, it is clear, two things are clear with theistic evolutionists, all right? One of them is they buy lock, stock, and barrel the neo-Darwinian conception of the development of life on the planet. So they believe the concept basically of mutation and natural selection as the machine that drives the process forward, that moves from one level of complexity to an increasing level of complexity over a long period of time. And usually part of that package is what's called universal common descent, UCD. Although not all evolutionists hold to that, it is one way of characterizing the Darwinian project, such that this process I just described, mutation, natural selection, is a process that's been going from the original life source all the way down the line, such that all living things are connected back to that source. So there is common descent that's universal. All right. Now, on the Darwinian model, this is very important. On the Darwinian model, this process is not teleological. That means it has no end in mind. There is no purpose in the process. It is accidental, if you will. We were formed by a process, as one said famously, and I'm paraphrasing here, that did not have us in mind. Okay? So that's Darwinism, and that's a pretty standard take on it, and not controversial in terms of the notion, I mean, the way I've represented it. Okay? Now, theistic evolutionists, by that notion, characteristically, and there are this is a generalization, so you're going to find some exceptions here and there. But characteristically, they buy the Darwinian project because they say, as Christians, no one will believe our message if we deny what they think science has proven. So this is really important to them. But they believe in God. And they believe in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. I mean, that's the beginning of our story. And so some robust sense of that verse has to be represented in their cosmology. And so they believe that, but they also believe the Darwinian model. So how does that work? Well, it works like this. God used evolution. It's a very general way of characterizing it. I've heard it dozens and dozens and dozens of times that is characterized in that way. God used evolution. Now, with that foundation in place, this is where it's tricky answering the question, because if I say that theistic evolutionists think that evolution is accidental, on the one hand, that's not true because they think God used it, and so God is the one who is somehow involved. So it's not an accident in that sense. However, if you ask, well, how does the process of evolution work? Their model is the same as the secular model. It's no different. And therefore, and the secular model is accidental. So the question that I ask of the theistic evolutionist is, if God is using it, what is he doing? At what point is God volitionally intervening in the process of the development of life so that he gets something he's after? He designs some particular thing. Therefore, in his mind, there is an end, a telos, a teleology, to the process. It's going somewhere in particular. It's going to us, for example. God wants to use evolution to create man, shall we say. Well, there's not many things that he can do. Well, maybe he causes the changes in the DNA. So he creates the mutation. But see, if he creates the mutation, that's intelligent design, and that's not fundamentalist Darwinism. All right, because you can't. That's got to happen on its own, because they're mutagenic agents in the environment that cause those mutations. So he can't mess with the mutations and still be evolution. Well, then maybe he's somehow helping certain things to survive. He manipulates the environment or somehow so certain ones survive who aren't the fittest. Well, no, that's another intervention in a certain sense of God. So that isn't the Darwinian model either. And since theistic evolutionists are characteristically committed to the full Darwinian model, they aren't going to say that's what God did either. Now, there's one other way that God could be involved with the process, and some argue this way. It's called fully gifted creation. And if I understand it properly, God sets up the initial conditions. And it's kind of like a sophisticated row of dominoes. You've seen those YouTube things or whatever where somebody sets this whole thing up, then he knocks one domino over. And then just by natural progression of the laws of physics, these dominoes all fall in a certain order and make a picture or something like that. So some designed feature comes out of this mechanistic process as long as the initial conditions are set up just so. So on this view, God sets up the initial conditions just so, knocks over the first domino, the creation event, and everything else just flows from there. Well, that's, I think, a viable way of characterizing it. The problem is the evidence is not there to support it. I think that might be the case, and actually I think it is the case when you think of cosmic evolution. That is, you think of the development of the universe as opposed to life, the physical universe, because that really flows forward on fairly simple physics. And so if the initial conditions are just so over a long period of time with things happening, once that first domino is knocked over, so to speak, the Big Bang, set just right, you're going to get a planet like ours that is capable of sustaining life. But then getting life, that's different. Now you've got to intervene, because no materialistic process has ever been demonstrated that can do that. It's too complex. All right. So you have to, and even from the original life, to go for more complex life, you need new infusions of information. And so that particular option is not going to work. So I acknowledge that theistic evolutionists say, in one sense, that it's not by chance, because they invoke God. God used it. So that's not a chance proposition. But then I ask, well, what did a God actually do? And this is where they can't identify anything that God actually does, because the minute God does anything, as opposed to letting the evolutionary process run by chance, it's no longer evolution. And I think that's the fix that theistic evolutionists are in. So I don't think it's a mischaracterization, straw man, as long as I qualify my points carefully. And I think characteristically I do that. I certainly did this time. I think that theistic evolution is designed by chance, which is a contradiction of terms. Chance is a necessary part of the Darwinian model, and design is a necessary part of the theistic model. They don't fit together. And if you're going to say God used evolution, well, then you're obliged to say what God did. It's not enough to simply say, well, he's behind the scenes somehow doing something that we don't know he did. Because then I ask, well, then why invoke God at all if natural processes seem to be adequate to the task? Okay? So there's the answer to the question. I hope that was helpful. I'm going to just leave it at that and apologize to Chris that we weren't able to talk together. I'm Greg Kokel for Standard Reason. Give them hemp, friends.